I'm Charlotte Ricker. You're listening to Free Reign Podcast.
And you pick the funnest husband, so you can imagine Nick, so it was the funniest thing.
I think that's hilarious.
I am sat in a service station in Reading, which is nice. Just pulled in off the motorway. I'm on my way to interview an eventing legend for a future Free Reign podcast. Now, I don't use the term legend lightly. This man really is the biggest name in equestrian sport. So it's very exciting that I have managed to get an interview with him. More on that later. A little teaser for you there about what's coming up in Free Reign in the future. In the meantime, I've got my recording equipment with me, so I thought I would record the introduction to podcast number 2, which is the second part of my interview with the lovely Pippa and William Funnell. Pippa talks about not only her eventing career, but also her career as a very successful published author. William reveals what it's like to be known as husband of Pippa. Luckily, he's got a very good sense of humour, so it doesn't really bother him. I also ask him the questions which the Twitter eventing community sent in to me. So thank you so much for that. It was good fun actually asking those questions. And they were great questions, so I do really appreciate it. In the future, I will be getting you guys to send in questions via Free Reign podcast social media, but at the moment, I haven't actually set that up yet. So I'm just riding on the coattails of Twitter eventing. Thank you for them, for reaching out, for allowing me to reach out to the community, and thank you for the questions. It was, like I say, it was good fun, and they went down really well. So enough of me, let's get on with the podcast, and I will chat to you again after. See ya. With the horse in particular, it's so up and down, and I know that, Pippa, you've had real ups and downs, and obviously you were the first rider to ever win, you know, the Grand Slam eventing, and then there was definitely a period where you sort of stepped out a bit, and you were writing books for a while, weren't you? That was quite a while ago, wasn't it? Was that like 2009 sort of?
Yeah, I mean, I've done 22 books.
Wow. 22. Wow. Are you still doing them now?
No, I'm not doing them at the moment. I don't say, never say never, but at the moment I'm not. I really enjoy doing them, and, you know, hopefully, you know, I think could seem to really enjoy them. It's great because they've been translated into quite a few different languages now. They're in German, Swedish now, Italian, I think even Hungarian. They're translated into Hungarian, so I give the lady that help once a week, they can get their Hungarian books. No, that's been another sort of huge part of it, and I've really enjoyed doing them. I'm not sure William's... You would never even read one.
He's probably not really. He's not the market, is he?
No, he's a little bit old. But he's always threatened to write the adult version. I think that could be bestsellers then.
You did take a break because you were trying for the children, and then you're writing books at the same time. Is that quite hard, doing children's books at the same time? Did that, or was that sort of quite cathartic, or was that, sounds like it'd be quite a difficult thing to do?
I want to talk about it much on podcast, but it was a quite a difficult time, wasn't it? And I took a step back because I thought that was only fair on the owners, but anyway, you know, wasn't meant to be, so you have to crack on, don't you? You know, had some, and one thing I didn't stop doing was doing the young horses, and then some of those young horses came through. Probably, if I'm honest, after the Grand Slam, it was nearly quite a tough time because I had such an amazing year, and obviously having, you know, won 2 European Championships and won medals at the Olympics and been on the teams. After the Grand Slam, it was quite tough because even though it was amazing to do, having done that and having had that season I had, it was almost like you have to deal mentally, well, realistically, I'm not gonna better.
So, it's like you've peaked.
Yeah, it was slightly like that. And
how old would you have been then?
I think I was about 36. Because then I sort of realised was actually the reason I did it wasn't actually just for the sport, which is exactly why I do it still today. It's not the actual sport I event for. It's the whole passion of the day-to-day, doing young horses, riding nice young horses, producing them, and that build-up of sort of, you know, trust and I'm still realistic. I'm getting on, like quite a few of us are in the sport, and yes, I have had a couple of bad falls over the last couple of years, which for sure, you know, I'd be silly, like as I think I said the same in that interview at Blenheim that I did with you, is that it would be crazy if you didn't, it didn't make you think. So I am realistic. I am aware. But I actually also feel at the moment, I feel that I'm still riding well enough. The minute I feel as though I'm really not, then I'll be stopping. But I think,
but you say stopping the top level competing, but obviously producing
I'll always keep riding, and you know that's all my life.
Yes,
you know?
Yeah. And I know William was
getting involved with, you know, every winter I do quite a lot with the young horses. Sorry, I've got stolen now because the cat's coming. We don't let
the
cat's a yard cat, and she's a stray cat, and she's jumped behind me.
Is the cat's not allowed in?
And she never comes in the house.
Is she allowed in? Well, the dogs don't seem bothered by her.
Becomes a personal thing to me. That I want to do as good a job as I can, and the same with the books. You know, if I decide to take something on, I want to put everything into it, whether it's young horses that are going show jumping, whether it's the event horses. And to me, it's more important for me to go to bed thinking I've done the best possible job. And I in an eventing, I nearly. Of course, you know, I'm competitive and I want to win, but actually I'm at a stage now I would still rather feel I've ridden the horse well and I've given the horse a good ride and it's grown in confidence than necessarily rattle it around faster than I should slightly.
To win, you mean?
Pushing.
Because,
and it's one aspect of the sport that, if I'm honest, I actually feel a little bit more uncomfortable with now, because I see more and more.
Because
now,
you mean because of this? I mean, is it increasing? People aren't making the time. Do you think that's one way they've got to, like, they've always got to up the ante? They've got to make it more and more challenging. Is that a new thing they're doing of having?
I just think we see faster more time. And more people riding faster and faster, and it makes me uncomfortable watching it. It does, and you can get, you know, your Michael Young's, Oliver, yes, Pinky Easy, you're very good at riding.
Chris Burton.
At speed. Chris Burton's another great one.
Yeah.
But I do think more injuries with horses come from riding them fast.
Yeah.
Because I think it's speed that often can do the injuries.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting, like, they've changed the scoring. You know, they're dropping the coefficient for the scoring of the dressage. It's not being multiplied, the dressage
scores now,
which is going to bring the dressage scores a lot closer. And they say, you know, when you read the horse now, they say in the articles, they ask people, they say it's going to make, you know, it safer for cross country. Well, I can't see how can they make it safer,
because it's a cross country competition, isn't it?
Exactly.
Then you want the dressage to be really influential, don't you?
Well, no, you want it all to be equal, but I don't see how just by dropping the multiple and pushing everyone closer, I think it's going to make people ride a bit faster cross country, which is, you know, yes, you've still got to keep the influence, but I think it still gets, you know, I'll be honest, I don't like these courses where course builders are, you know, setting fences where you're, you know, yanking and pulling and...
Do you prefer the more sort of gallopy courses?
Yeah, I do. I think, you know, where...
Than the sort of more technical.
Courses. I don't have a problem with technical, but I have a problem when you're all the time knocking horses off their rhythm.
Right, yes, yeah.
And I have a big thing where as a real pet hate, because I see it more and more now, when you walk cross-country courses, not just... nationally and internationally, when you see it more and more now where you can walk a distance and think, am I going mad? Does the course designer mean us to go to put one or two strides in there or two or three strides?
Yes,
me,
yeah.
You know, it's one, two or three and there shouldn't be any question
yes.
to is it two or is it three or
yeah.
is it one or is it two? Yes.
Yeah.
If it's four, five or six, that's different.
Yes, but on that sort of striding, it should be very clear cut. Great. If I've ever got any questions about anything, I just go on Twitter eventing and you get loads of people responding.
Right.
You know, anything, silly things like, I don't know what to feed my horse, or, you know, I want to go up to 100. Can anyone recommend a really nice, straightforward 100? And you'll get so many responses. It's fantastic. I love it. It's just a really good community. So I put a request out on Twitter eventing and people, you know, people like you a lot and they've all got lots of things to say. So the first question we had was from Kelly Jones, who said, what is your plan for Billy the Biz?
The plan for Billy the Biz next year is, I think from my point of view, I had a rough year this year from my own physical, from having a few falls and I was sore and I was...
You had show jumping falls, didn't you? It wasn't event,
yeah,
it wasn't cross country falls.
In the spring where I was knocked out in Ireland.
Ooh.
And that took me a long time, you know, when they go on about concussion and things. It just, you know.
And that was right. Cross country.
I was signed off for three, yeah, and it wasn't off Biz, it was off another horse. But with Biz next year, I'll probably, in my head, I want to go out and have a bit of fun, paddle my own canoe, you know, enjoy the sport for what it is. The horses didn't run a lot this year, so give him a few fun runs, and probably with him I'll aim him for Le Moulin again, rather than put huge pressure on myself and aim for badminton. I'm just going to spend the spring getting the horses going, enjoying myself, having a bit of fun, and then hopefully aiming him for Le Moulin, and then from there we will see. So I'm not starting out thinking I've got to get to the World Championships. I'm not thinking that at all.
Yes, yeah.
The main thing is to really enjoy the sport, enjoy the horses I have, and then aim them to what I feel, how they're going.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's so key, because I think it's so easy to forget
yeah.
to enjoy it, isn't it? Because when you put a pressure on yourself, you...
Yeah.
Because I know it's your job, though, isn't it? You know, it's your job. So obviously you do have to have certain achievements
yeah, you
because you've got owners and sponsors. And but do... Yeah, I think... I'm not going to go on. I've got to focus on what these people are saying here. So we have got Tamsin Drew has asked about your breeding program. How do you decide which ones to keep and which ones to sell on, William?
Basically, they're all for sale. It's just what time to sell them.
Really? You don't? There isn't one you think, I'll have that and I'll keep that and it'll be my Olympic horse or...?
No.
No?
Because the way the business is now, we need... You know, obviously it costs money. You know, we're probably the only genuinely... commercial stud. We don't have any, Donna and I don't have any money coming in from anywhere else, so we survive on what the stud
yeah,
makes.
Yeah.
So we need to,
yeah.
you know, it needs to be commercial. So unfortunately, or unfortunately, you know, the people want to buy the, you know, the. So I would say if it's going to be a nice horse, it's going to be, to be 100s and stuff like that. Obviously, better for me to sell it.
Yeah.
Earlier, you know, so because the money I put into it,
You're not going to get it back, are you?
Get back. No. So it all has to be geared on you know, on increasing value as to for time you put into them.
Sure.
And every horse we get, we want to make him the best he can be. So they're all individuals and they're all treated like that. So we want to bring out the best in, you know. And you never know. You know, some of those horses you think perhaps haven't got the scope to do. You think it can do 130, can end up doing 150. You know, it's like anything. Sometimes the ones that train, you know, are more trainable are better than ones that show fantastic talent when they're three and four and five even. So,
another one for you, William, from Carla Russell. Have you ever thought about changing discipline and leaving the start box yourself?
No. No.
You wouldn't like to walk that far, walking course,
really. I don't mind walking the courses, but just, I always think it seems a lot of hard work. You know, we go to Olympia and we jump three competitions every day and we get three results a day. And you go to Badminton or a three-day event, you leave home on Tuesday and there's one result on Sunday, you know. So, yes, I know there's only one Grand Prix and one Nations Cup, but it just seems an awful lot of hard work for not a lot of runs. And
Prize money
is not everything, but it's still, you know,
terrible. But I think that's what I love about eventing is that when you go show jumping, it's over so quickly. And so if you have one down, because I've got one horse, you know, that's it. Whereas with eventing, you know, if you do a bit of a crappy dressage test, it's like, oh well, got the show jumping, you know. Oh, and then you've got the cross country. It's like a nice day out, which I get at your level. You need results, don't you? I suppose you want results.
Yeah. You want, you know, that is the thing. Yes, one competition. Yeah, there's. You know, an international show, there's a lot of different competitions on there. So it's not, yes, I feel you have a crappy dress, so you know you're not going to win, don't you?
No, you're not going to win. No, it's true. But I think, they still can think, if you have, I'm sure you would agree, Pippa, if you have a really good cross-country run, then that's just a buzz, isn't it?
Yeah.
So even if you're kind of annoyed about your dressage, if you have a really good cross country, do you not still feel sort of satisfied?
Yeah, I do, but I find probably more now too. I struggle. It's like, unless you're actually doing the cross country to really educate them, I can see why a lot of people now, and I would be the same, how if you're not in the hunt, why risk the horse, why risk yourself?
Yes.
Unless you're needing to go around to educate the horse and
yes,
to give it
yeah,
away.
Yeah,
you,
yeah.
You need the education. You know, to me, why risk them? You know, which is a bad attitude, because in the old days we didn't used to have that. You used to keep battling on them.
But you still would if you got a bad dressage. You don't pull out, do you?
No, you don't pull out. But what I'm saying is more if you have a pickup on the cross country. It's particularly early on in the course, and because there's so many more events you can go to,
you'd pull up,
put your hand up, walk home, think, right, okay, not having the best of days, I'm going to do a bit more homework and take it to the event 2 weeks, in 2 weeks' time.
But William, do you feel like you would be brave enough to tackle those fences? I know you don't particularly like.
Yes, I would.
Yeah.
You would.
Yeah. He schooled the odd one of mine cross country.
Oh, really? You take cross country schooling?
Well, at a time when we were first together, Pip had some that weren't so brave, perhaps cross country or stuff like that, then I would take him here.
His extra strong legs.
And because did you used to hunt?
My father was a huntsman for 20 years. Actually.
So, you've been hunting, then,
So as a kid, probably from the age of five, I've sort of trotted along behind my father hunting hounds for probably every Saturday until I was 10 or 11, I think. So,
wow.
And then hunted until I went to a light session. And then I've hardly hunted since. It didn't seem quite the same when my father wasn't hunting hounds.
Yes.
Warrington wants to know how William copes with being married to a famous horsewoman. How do you cope, William? I have to say, that was my retort. I was like, how do you cope, William?
I don't mind being Pippa Farnham's husband. I can live with that.
You're man enough, you can live with that.
No, Bronner said one time I was coming back, which this story has been told a few times, with Laura Kraut and Nick Skelton. And we were just coming through the tunnel and Nick and Laura showed their passports and obviously the lady in the kiosk working for Her Majesty was checking the passports, was a little horsey, and she saw, you know, are you Nick Skelton, the famous show jumper? And yes, and Laura Kraut, are you Laura Kraut? And then I passed my passport in from the back of this. And you Pippa Farnham's husband? So yeah, you can imagine Nick thought it was the funniest thing.
I think that was hilarious. I suppose she had Laura Kraut though. What nationality was she, sorry? She was
American.
Oh, American. Sorry, I missed that bit. Sorry. Okay, fair enough. Yes.
So, yes, it was Nick thought that was the funniest thing he'd ever.
That is.
So, yes. No,
that is quite funny.
I can't say.
You can handle it.
Yes.
And again, we've sort of touched on this, but Andrew Parry wants to know how you spot the stars of the future's foals. Have you ever, well, one thing we haven't said, have you ever regretted? Have you sold something that you thought wasn't going to be and then you've regretted?
No, I mean, I think as long as you think you sold them somebody that and they can, you know, they reach their talent, then I think it's great, because I think we can't always tell. You know, nobody really, really knows what's going to, you know. So we sell one, you know, they're all for sale. As I said, perhaps we could have nurtured that talent for longer and it would have been more commercial viable to have done that. That would be the only thing that... To survive, the billy's, the stud to survive needs to make the most of its jewels.
Yeah.
Otherwise, commercially, you know, when you get to those 4 or 5 year olds, I still struggle when people ring and say, you know, have you got a nice 4 year old under $5,000 or, you know, 10, you know, at the end of the day, if it's a nice one and it's four, it's cost us $10,000, isn't it? So if we're breaking even for a nice one, then...
So what does it start at? If I did come to you and I did say, what am I looking at? If I want to get an event horse, might go up to novice.
You know, still a nice young horse. If it's a really nice, you know, young horse that's clean and everything, really, you've got to look at a base at 15, really. You've only got to work it out, haven't you? You know, you have a four-year-old. We put the mare in foal 5 years ago. Probably paid £1,500 for a stud fee, probably £1,000 to the vet to get it in foal.
Yeah.
That's 2.5, keep the mare a year. You know, it's 3,500 when it hit the floor. Keep it 4 years, break it in another 1,000.
And your time spent bringing it on, that's, you know, charged by the hour.
It's 10,000 to really to be a four-year-old.
Yeah.
And if it's correct and everything, then...
I can dream one day. Let's have a look. What else have we got here? Do you get to spend much time together? So you often see Pippa at show jumping, but you rarely see William at an event, which isn't.
So
I did see exactly what I said. I did see him at Blenheim, and I put up the interview as proof. Is that to help you with your riding, or what reason do you go to Pilates?
Yeah, I think it helps enormously. I think, you know, we both go to a really good guy, John Harris, who's a osteopath, and he suggested, must have been 5 or 6 years ago, that he said about doing some other form of exercise to stretch in the legs.
Yeah, yeah.
He suggested Pilates, so... Probably been doing it 6 years now, and you started about
4 years
ago.
And do you feel like it's helping?
I had a lot of lower back problems and had it injected and stuff like that. And then, really, the only way the injections are fine, but they don't actually solve the problem.
No.
So once you get enough pain relief, you can actually get it working and get your core stronger. It's made a big difference, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think most people's horses have all sorts of aches and pains.
Well, I think we're all so aware the whole time of the horses of how they are. And we have someone come in every Monday that, you know, on a regular basis every Monday, and they go through whatever horses we feel might need looking at. And, you know, we're the first to get a vet in, or you're first to...
So physio, that is, comes in.
We're
so quick to back off if horses are wrong. But, yeah, when it comes to us, I agree, we don't, you know, we keep ploughing on.
We'll just take more painkillers.
Yeah. Well, I've really, really got strict about not taking... Because I got to a stage where I was taking so many painkillers, and that's where I... been using this pain pod machine.
Which is like a TENS machine, isn't it, you were showing me earlier?
It's similar to a TENS machine. It's called pain pod, and they do a little MyPod, which is a smaller one, and it's incredible the different settings it has. And also I'm sort of big into sort of turmeric as well, which I've been taking
Because
that has, you know, anti-inflammatory things. But I definitely think since I've stopped taking... Nurofen and paracetamol on a regular basis, I definitely think because I'm a bit asthmatic, it definitely helped my...
Really?
Really.
That's interesting.
You know, I think it's important, particularly, yes, when you're younger, be honest, you probably don't, you know, you haven't had so many falls, you don't.
Yeah.
You know, the longer you get, you know, at the end of the day, it's going to catch up. You know, we've been riding between... 6 and 8 and 10 horses a day for God knows how many years, you know, our careers. So it's going to catch up on us.
Yeah,
You know, we want to keep going. And so you find ways to manage it.
It's funny, isn't it? Because, you shouldn't make generalisations. They can't not head speak for themselves. But I can't imagine John and Michael Whittaker doing Pilates and the like. But how does he do it? I mean, how old's John now? 60 something, isn't he? He's over 60 now, isn't he?
Incredible.
And I really don't believe he does. You know, I don't think he'd be seeing a physio or having turmeric. I think, you know, it's just incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you think it's just it's like a freak that he can do it, or do you think we're going to see more and more? Right. I mean, obviously Mark Todd is, you know, amazing.
Yeah, but Toddy, I don't know the ins and outs of Toddy, but I know Toddy's big into the yoga and things.
He looks like he's super fit, isn't he? He's very lean.
You know, I've heard Andrew Nicholson, I think he does quite a bit on a rowing machine. You know, I think various people do, you know, they all have, and a lot of people you hear, I know Chris Burton, he does Pilates. Someone in the village goes to him and joins the same class. So I think it's pretty big.
I think eventers are... I just feel like eventers and shows are a different breed. I just feel like that when event riders is different to show jumpers.
I think Nick, although Nick sort of didn't see Pilates, Skelton. Nick Skelton, but Nick would be very big in the gym because he's had back problems as well.
Yes,
so although he wouldn't call it Pilates, he would do a lot of the stuff that we would do in the gym, same exercises with a ball and stuff like that.
We did all.
Most of what Nick would work on would be very similar, although Nick wouldn't call it Pilates. Yes. Laura does. Laura Crowd does Pilates.
Yeah.
So I think, that's just perception, though, isn't it? I think so. Nick would work out a lot. I think John and Mo, you know, they're just Yorkshiremen, aren't they?
They are, they're rock hard Yorkshiremen. Yeah.
Well,
yes.
And incredibly talented.
Yeah,
so naturally talented.
I think it also helps John being, because he's a little smaller and I think it's also easier because you don't have to bend quite as much.
Yeah, yeah. But
it's still incredible at his age. There's no way my body will be, you know, I mean, basically there's another 10 years. No chance.
We'll see. lot of horses. It's hugely expensive to enter these sports, isn't it? How on earth? And obviously, the stud's doing very well. But how do you make it? How do you make it pay?
Well, we've been so hugely fortunate and lucky over the years to have had some great backers and supporters. I mean, from my point of view with the eventing, obviously the owners have been a key role to the success that I've had. And I've been lucky enough to have a lot of those owners for, you know, between 25 and 30 years. Mm. So a lot of my owners are still those, and they've become great friends over all those years. And obviously also we've been hugely lucky to have the support from our sort of sponsors and suppliers, and an awful lot of the expense is covered. I mean, Toggy, I go, the my sort of association with Toggy goes back to, you know, the mid-90s, and they're still absolutely loyal and you know, this time, all through the year, you know, they do such a range of clothing, and obviously from FBI brands, it's not just Toggy, it's also Champion, so the crash helmet and things. And then we get, you know, the tack is covered by Duvaku, so obviously all the saddles across, you can imagine, you know, as we talked about the numbers, so all the boys have Duvaku
same for probably as long with Alan LePage with feed.
Alan LePage,
since Pippa moved from Norfolk,
well,
so that's been
when
a long.
I was 16, that's what Ruth McMullen fed her horses, Alan LePage, and Ray Page. Tim and Ben are Bruce, and I rode the horse, and so they've again been so extremely loyal. We've fed their horses, well, the whole of my career the horses have been around the page. We said Duvaku, I mean SSG.
So for me Charles Owen have been fantastic for.
Yeah, I was gonna say, because I know your whole yard, don't they, where
Charles
Owen,
the Billy
yeah.
Stud hats are all Charles Owen, which is, they've been very good, and the same with the. That is, you know, but that's how I can see the with, you know, online marketing is going to be, but you know.
But yeah, I guess for you guys, if you're getting that kind of support,
the horse boots. I mean, and the one thing I think I would, I mean. Where, you know, we're passionate about is that we have to believe in the product. You know, it's not, you know, we feed Alan Page because we want to feed it, because
yes.
we think our horses do really well on it. Likewise.
Yes. I don't think either of us are people that would just use a product because of them, you know.
Being given it.
We're really on the button with your worm, and you can, horses can go from being well to.
Yeah.
To losing them, unless you're really on top of the worm. For the amount of horse we have, we're very lucky to have the support from Verbeck.
So we're very lucky with the support.
So long may it continue.
Yes, indeed.
Till they think we're getting too old and not winning enough.
No, I don't think that's gonna be. It's gonna be a while yet. Well, that's all for this episode of Free Rein Podcast with me, Charlotte Ricker. I really hope you enjoyed listening. And if you did, please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Until next time, happy riding.